I think it's time for the friendly town meeting, but this isn't a normal friendly town meeting. This week, it's friendly town noir. So everyone, normally at this time of the night, I call the Friendly Town City Council meeting to order, and I have us all chant Friendly Town, but I think that'd be a little bit out of place right now, so I just want you guys to snap, all right? Friendly Town. Friendly Town. Friendly Town. Friendly Town. Friendly Town. Okay, that's stupid. Stop. Friendly Town. Where the town is exceptionally friendly. I sound like Mitch Hedberg right now. I don't know why. Well, we here at the Friendly Town City Council meeting have got a lot of mysteries to get to the bottom of. But we can't do it without the help of our number one detective. Please, welcome to the stage, your host for the evening, Flint Chumlin.
Right? I'm jealous too. Found it at the Dollar Tree. $2, what a deal. My name is Flint Chumley. I'm an ace detective. But that doesn't mean squat in a town like Friendly Town. When you're new here, they want to see the deeds you've done with their own eyes. Friendly, but skeptical. Was even the model of the town for at least 2 minutes before they replaced the whole sign with a slip and slide. Figured that was a better option anyway. However, we all live in this happy, unknown town, but there is a dark underbelly. And I'm the man who's going to be solving one of those such cases tonight. This dreary, cold evening that Friendly Town's given us. I'm on a case! Case has racked the town to its very core, but only just enough to talk about it over dinner during the rounds of Jeopardy. And you know you don't interrupt anyone during the Daily Double. It all started with a knock. A man, the curator of the Friendly Town Museum. What's that? The stories usually start with some sort of girl or something. Perhaps he can help. Well, this is not one of those stories. This is one of those discount ones. The ones that you find inside the Walmart inside Friendly Town. No, we have to start out small in Friendly Town. I'm from out of town. They don't trust me yet. I start with the curator. He came out of desperation more than anything, his hair frazzled like the perm of a poodle that had just found its owner's meth supply. He said his name was Stephen Curry. Like the basketball player? No, like the curator of the Friendly Town Museum. I'm pretty sure he's a basketball player also. But he's not. He's me, and I curate. I can't shoot hoops. Well, have you ever tried? We argued like this for 30 minutes before he threatened to leave. And he finally came to me with what was on his mind. A missing artifact inside the Friendly Town Museum. It was a square. A drawn square for the mysterious QEDopolis outside. Very rare. Very, very mysterious. Unknown missing. The only clue was a faint smell of hummus through the air, wafting through the room like the river. Or maybe that was a river beside it, because mostly the town in that area smells a lot like hummus. Next day, I told him I would be on the case. And then I proceeded to get wasted on scope, mouthwash, and egos. Because that's what that Flint Chumley, ace detective, say I'm still a little hungover from the previous scope hangover. But that's what I do. Next day I get a call from the chief. A murder in the museum. I hadn't investigated the scene before then, but I saw the bloody mess. The body was bludgeoned to death. The curator of the museum, something with a sharp corner. They are thick here, like Waffle House. I skipped ahead in my own internal monologue. I should really keep better indexes in my head. Very odd. But anyway, I decided to go to the one place in town that I know I can get proper information. It's the bar. A bar that I know very well. Perhaps I'm in it right now, in my head. They are thick, like Waffle House hash browns done exactly the way a criminal would. Smothered, covered, and murdered. This is where the baddest of the bad go in this town. Done with being friendly. And just looking for a good old fist fight. Or a just a few human in this sack of a town. I'm not looking for funny games though tonight. I'm looking for clues. And I'm about to start with the first one here. I don't know their names yet. Like I said, new to the town. I gotta guess it here. But if I had to guess, my first one here. He's the man behind the counter himself, the bartending mayor of this establishment. The one that you should tip very, very well. He waits patiently for his orders to come in while dreaming of his big getaway for New Happywood, where the films are made and the stars are glazed like a hot donut sign at the Richie Cream. He says he hopes to make the Bavarian cream donut in that dozen supply of donuts. I can see his name now on the marquee with Dear Sweet Diane. I call him Todd Lewis.
Before I get into character, I just wanted to say that to write this, I like looked up a couple of like glossaries of like hardball detective terms, and one of them opened, if you're ever having trouble reading a detective novel, or if you just want to sound tough, you can talk like this. And none of it sounded tough. All right. Listen up. Unhook your blowers and don't worry about that rattler you're waiting on. Trains don't run on time in this town anyway. I'm about to tell you, chowderheads, about the most gullible mark to ever be taken for a 7-star buggy ride in this town. That gullible mark was me. Todd Lewis is the name, that's what it says on the birth certificate. But around some circles, they call me Tractor Lewis. On account how I can dig up dirt on anybody. And if a case is stuck, old Tractor will loosen it up. Sorry, the flavor text is important. Old Tractor will loosen it up enough to get some mugs singing down at the clubhouse. When I ain't on a case or drinking a load full of dizzy juice, I sling pilsners and slick at a little flop house called the Pilot Light. The place is on the up and up, but the regulars are all 6s and 7s. You're just as likely to get a under-the-table shot of ill juice as you are a Harlem sunset. It was down there that the sad grift went down, like the rain falling outside. It wasn't a regular box job. No, these weasel pulled a box job inside the mind. We were having a comedy show, like one that you might have seen at vaudeville or one of the burlesque houses with the babes that are professional dolls. I was hitting on all 8s that night. The audience was ready and rowdy. They were as happy with the wooden spoons as they were Grandma's china that night. One of the yes men called me up from the bullpen to the office, introduced me to a couple of his friends. One was the muscle of the operation, a gorilla of a man. I could tell he didn't care for dicks. Went by the name Hursty. Looked like he could smash your head into Maggie's raspberry jam. Then there was the wild man. He was a soft velvet gentleman with the breath of a killer and the brains of pudding. He went by the name of Saint, but he didn't look like one. I got an impression he liked the dick game a little too much. Like he was too interested. Made me uneasy. They were both just jingle green Jaspers, jerking a nod at everything that their boss Tyler had to say. And boy, did he have things to say. I have a feeling his librarian didn't keep good track of all the books about orchestral movements and musical theory, because this guy thought he was the only one that had ever read them.
They were the friendly town players, and you had to talk to them if you wanted a show in this town, if you wanted to get anything done. So I came in there, rolling steady. There's not a lot of light on stage. Rolling steady money with a handful of winning cards. Little did I know I was playing in a clip joint. They had me pitch a show right there in front of them on the spot. In front of Heaven, the audience, and those three devils. I went on a spiel about how great it would be to rip on the Gumshoes live. And I could tell that I had a winner. But I had dipped my mitt too early. Tyler smiled and said he'd wait until Shane Ryan could host it. But everybody in this town knows that Shane Ryan didn't go out to many shows anymore. Too busy rolling in the hay with that sweet dolly's guy. Then over a year later, I saw a poster hanging up with my idea on it. Thought maybe they thought I'd forgot. Maybe I didn't care. Who cares if the show was your idea, as long as it's a good show, Tyler says. Through the blower. Suddenly, the idea and concept communist he is, as long as they're not his ideas. That's the case of the cult stolen concept. And a reminder to all of you, to keep your gams locked up tight and your ideas locked up tighter. It might not keep you from itching, but it'll keep you from getting a scratch. There's no smoking in here. That's your okay. Aww.
I paused for a while to pretend that Todd Lewis was making a monologue to the audience. It sounded pretty good in my head, but I could tell that he had some bitterness inside there that I decided not to approach at that point. They got other people in the bar that I can talk to about the case. Crack it wide open. Turn to my friend, the only person that has ever cared for me. Sir Charles Barkley, formerly of the Phoenix Suns. Solved a couple cases or two in his time, believe you me. Boy from Leeds, Alabama. And looking through here, I got my next idea. Turn my head over, somewhere over in this direction, because in the light of my eye, I could not see at this current time. I see him every Monday! Sometimes he's a town mayor, like we all are sometimes, but mostly I see him utilizing his geography skills to yell at the TV, kid game shows, failing to place the countries of Africa down correctly. Rockapella screams into his ear. He has many names, but the one I use for the internal monologues is Tyler Sonicson.
I didn't know how to process it. Didn't know what it meant. Heard it so many times. That message in my ear, coming from the stereo, coming from every DJ booth of every goddamn gin joint in this goddamn city. Every single night, every single day, I turn on the local classic rock radio station on my Victrola. Think about it for a second. Realize how funny that is. It ate away at me. What the fuck was he saying? What was he trying to tell me? This man who's under the bridge. Man who was claiming he was giving it away, but what? There were four elements in the underworld. If you've been to this godforsaken town, you know. Their blood, their sugar, their sex, and their magic. Rumor had it they briefly had a Latino guy playing with them, but he disappeared very quickly and went back to this bitch Jane. Her addiction. I just didn't understand it. What was he saying to me? What was this bridge-dwelling man trying to tell me? I just don't know. made me sweat inside. It made me well up with anxiety. What the fuck was he saying at the end of the chorus to that song, Give It Away? Does anybody know? I sure as hell didn't. What could it have been? What the fuck could it have been? Was he saying one kicked up and I'll flip it up the butt butt? That doesn't make any sense. Was he saying one big duff and I'll take it up the thumb bug? I ran through literally 300 different possibilities of words that Anthony Kiedis said at the end of the verse to Give It Away. One big dove and I'll flip it up above, above. Was that what he said? No one knows. No one fucking knew. Not even the slight parasitic man who is dancing around naked behind him. What was his name? Dick? I don't know. Flea, that was his name. We're working our way through the blood and the sugar, and we're about to get to the sex and the magic, and I didn't want to be in the room when that happened. So I went under the bridge and I asked him, hey man, I need to know, what the fuck do you say? I've tried 200 different phrases that you might be saying at the end of that chorus, and I just can't think of a single one that makes any sense. How old are you now, like 60? You're definitely in the magic portion of your career right now. He suggested that I go purchase a copy of his album Blood Sugar Sex Magic, and I said, no. And they said, are you sure? You can probably get it for 25 cents at McKay's on the CD, on the cheap scratch CD rack. I said, 25 cents is too much money to spend on your shitty band, Anthony Kiedis. He looked a little bit disturbed, like I told him something ridiculously true about himself. So when he looked up at me, lit a cigarette, and then promptly put it out because he's living a clean lifestyle now. And he said, Tyler, I still don't know what I said at the end of the chorus to Give It Away. So I stood up and I walked home with my head held high that night. I had out-sexed, out-blooded, out-sugared, and out-magicked the man himself. Next thing I knew I needed to figure out is how he wrote lyrics to that song Soul to Squeeze that were so bad it sent us into a tailspin the likes of which we'd never recovered from. To be perfectly honest though, I harbored a deep dark secret. Their cover of Stevie Wonder's Higher Ground was the best thing they ever recorded. Y'all have a good night.
I stared at Tyler Sonicson for a while as he stared on at the radio, wildered and wild as Red Hot Chili Peppers, the evening block from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, continued onward, driving mad with incantations that I did not quite understand. I decided to stay away. The next one. I looked over who could have known that could have caused such a madness. I see the house musician, a man who hears and knows everything that happens in this place if you have the right amount of Nicolas Cages. He prefers Raising Arizona's, but he won't mind a little bit of Con Air money if you give it to him. St. Thomas Ledoux is his name.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the note boy. People come in here looking for a good time, trying to forget their woes, trying to figure where they come from. And this is what they get. Me on stage, doing what I can to that horn. Just dumping what's left of my insides outside, because I got nowhere else to put them. It's all just empty in there. Well, it's empty out here. You play these notes thinking they're gonna make a difference, and it's just a black hole. Nobody listens. You try to be sweet to people. You try to make people see what's beautiful. Meanwhile, what do you see in return? what's happening around you. What are the customers paying for? Maybe they're paying for old Tyler Sonicson, blown out of his mind in the corner, reciting and Red Hot Chili Peppers lyrics himself because he's too scatterbrained on fucking dust to remember anything else. Maybe you see Todd Lewis, caught up in some rambling mumble jumble I couldn't make sense of, smoking in a non-smoking joint like he owns the place. Making deals and cashing checks he can't bring back to the bank. I once saw that guy, Thomas, Lady of the Night, an exorbitant amount of money that he could not afford. Could let him suck her toes when he couldn't deliver. And then had to watch that bastard get his hand broken behind the bar. Never heard a man cry so high. I couldn't hit those notes with my sax, baby. They sang through the night, ringing. I could hear him the next morning when I came in to clean up. This poor old bastard walking in thinks he's gonna figure this place out in his fucking fancy jacket. Thinks he's got $1 million wardrobe, he just knows the town. He thinks he can see in the people's soul, he thinks he knows what makes a criminal, and all of us, I'll tell him what makes a criminal. A criminal happens when someone realizes that nothing matters. That everything around them is empty, that it's chaos. The only thing they got left to live for is that thrill before the lights go out. That man doesn't know that feeling, because he comes in here with hope. He comes in here thinking something's going to change, thinking something's going to happen. The only thing that's going to happen is that he's going to leave his dignity here. Quiet room like always. No one ever cheers, no one ever claps, no one ever even knows I'm up here. It's like I'm playing to an empty room. But it's always full of degenerates. Just fucking around. Sinking lower and lower. Just till the lights go out. You wonder what's waiting for you down there in the dark. You think you know, but you don't know it's 4 a.m. You're fucking cold and shivering because you can't sleep. Because you need another fix. Because you haven't been paid in real cash in weeks. Because Ryan behind the bar knows you got a problem. He knows you'll keep fucking paying to serve him. He knows that you ain't got fucking ear for shit and you don't play a key to save your life. But the only person he can convince to fucking play this terrible joint is that you squeal those bad notes every night, just in the hope you can get one more taste of that rock, baby. You got no wind in your pipes because your throat's burning shit. Crackling crystals on the glass. What's it all supposed to add up to? Where do the notes go? You know there's something coming out of you because you can feel it all. You can feel it in your neck. It's the only part of you that feels anything anymore is the soreness, the burning itch in the back of that throat that you feel every time you take another hit, every time you play another note. And for what? To who?
Passed out mid-inner dialogue, thinking about the dialogue that Mr. St. Thomas Ledoux would have said. Thought about it a little bit longer. These people don't trust me. They know I'm from out of town. They noticed my last name, Flint Chumley. Too much like their town rivals. Well, I'm first from Chum Village. They think they smell too much like their so-called chowder. They call it chumder. I don't think that's a real thing. This town doesn't know how good it has it, but how bad at the same time. The next person is new to the scene. I've seen him over, bright young man. Like he's getting all mixed up in things that he doesn't quite understand. But I know, he may make the right decision one day, but will it be tonight? I'm about to find out, for his name is Clinton Ricks.
Nah, I ain't seen none. Clint ain't seen none. Came in there asking too many questions. His coat was too long. I didn't trust him. See, Clint been in here, hanging in the corner, way out back. So far back, they don't even really know I be being there, but I be in there, seeing them, people moving, shifty like shady eyes, left and right. Then he came in there, long coat, shit, asking questions. Too many questions. What's too many questions? The first question. That's too many questions. Because we don't ask questions around here. We just stare at each other. All strange, like, till the lights turn off. We get low enough to where it's like the Looney Tunes. You just see eyes. Nothing but eyes. But this time around, these eyes was too concerned for the truth. And the truth, around here, that costs too much money. How much money? More than I got in my pocket right now. Too much money to me. But I see him. I know what goes on around here. I got answers. You know? Asking about what goes on at museums. Talking to people who don't usually talk to each other. I think that before you came, it was good in this bar. Everybody got along, because we never really got along. We just played our part. But old long coat came shaking things up, see? The money didn't shine right, so I ain't tossed no coin. And that's all I gotta say.
Clinton and I stared at each other in a staring contest for 2 hours that night. Nothing was revealed, and I felt like I lost 20 bucks. Such is life, such a game that I play out there. It's all everyone for themselves, out there protecting their neck, waiting to be like Mina Harker, like waiting for Dracula to come back with muffins. He doesn't come back. Not with the muffins, not with anything else. The next man I looked to was a man that claimed to be homeschooled. The home the school was in was accredited in deceit and lies. That might be true. Beneath that smiling exterior hides a calculating man who ate a lot of hot dogs in front of me prior to this engagement. I call him Aaron Chastain. Say much. But when I do, they listen. They came to me the other day. They asked me a bunch of questions. I was answering. They was listening. They asked me if I'd seen a guy. I said I'd seen a few. It's either a guy or a girl. You're gonna see a guy sometimes. I told him I saw that guy. He was down by the gas station, eating some Frito-Lays. Honey barbecue Frito-Lays. The only type of Frito-Lay a man should eat. Thank you. Anyways, I saw this man eating his Frito-Lays. And that's when it happened. There was a little cat that ran up to him and wanted a Frito-Lay. He didn't want to share that Frito-Lay. So he kicked the cat over a Frito-Lay. Honey barbecue. I was answering. They was asking questions. And they was listening to my Frito-Lay and cat story. But what they don't know is it's all a diversion. Because a guy with the Frito-Lays is in the back. Go get him. He was sending me mixed signals, but I knew which is where it had to go. I looked towards the back room, and I kicked the door open. With a wham, I see the perpetrator that was escaping my view for so long. I heard of this man once, long ago. I heard he was a famous explorer. I heard this man once threw a chair to obtain the square for the very museum. Passionate. Usually see him over in a convivial town, where the expats, a friendly town from Convivialville, live and share macaroni recipes and macaroni art. And they just really like Kraft macaroni and cheese. It's a good thing, they say. I'll leave that up to them and to the man that is Arnold Gravesund. Which I may have not said correctly, but it's okay. It's in my mind. No one's hearing it.
The air was warm and humid as I stepped off my schooner. The FMS book. I had not been in Friendly Town for more than a year. The soil was new. The air smelled like breakfast cereal. The last time I had stepped foot in Friendly Town was the night before the United States presidential election. When everyone was so full of hope and no one had trouble getting erections. I stepped down onto the docks, and even though I had been away for so long, I felt comfortable. It was a nice feeling, like stepping into an old pair of yak fur socks. Arnold Grafson had returned with a ship full of glorious treasures and many fine detailed maps. Yes, surely his chosen hometown would welcome him like a hero. That seemed to not be the case. Please excuse me while I take off one of my many coats. That is better. I strode down to my old favorite gin joint, only to find that it had been replaced by a sex rehab center for very horny dogs. Across the street, what had been my old favorite burnt-out ruined was now a child's nightclub with valet parking. Things were different. Friendly Town is not where I was born. I come from Jotmundingaskir. I'm a simple man who has just longed to see the world. I've seen it all. Bon Amiver, Chum Village, Cape Convivial, Cape Cordial. It's all mixed up in my mind. But finally, here I was in my chosen home, Friendly Town, after more than a year. I expected a friendly reunion, but that is not what I got. I was walking down the street, and all of a sudden, the police cars appear out of nowhere. And they pull me in, they rough me up, shove me up against the hood, and I say, "Hey, not into that anymore." Bring me downtown to their police station. And I said, "Do you know who I am? I'm Arnold Grafson, world-famous explorer, cartographer, and builder of fine ships." And they said, "We know who you are. We lent you our copy of David Lee Roth's Crazy from the Heat last year. You still have not returned it to us." And I said, "I cannot return it. It was eaten by a paper shark during my voyage." And they said, "Is a paper shark a shark made of paper or a shark that eats paper?" And I said, "If I told you the truth, you would lose your mind!" So the chief strolls in. He's got his big hips swinging in the breeze. And I said, "You're looking good, chief." He says, "Oh, thank you. I'm on this new diet where I only eat these special diet cookies." And I said, "Oh, that must be a luxury. For the past year, I have been surviving on explorer's rations. When we ran out of cheese, we ate horse meat. When we ran out of horse meat, we ate beef meat. When we ran out of beef meat, we chewed our own fingernails. When we ran out of fingernails, we chewed on the wood of the ship. It was delicious. Best voyage I've ever been on." He said, "It's funny timing, you coming back into town, Arnold. There's been a murder at the Friendly Town Museum." He said, "At the Friendly Town Museum?" "Yes, and something was stolen from there as well." And I said, you suspect me? Arnold Grafson, world famous explorer, cartographer, and builder of fine ships, who just piloted the FMS Bjork Bork Bork around the world. And you think that I am somehow involved in this theft and murder? I've put half the artifacts in that museum. I am the one who brought you that pile of garbage from Cape Cordial. I am the one who brought you the giant wheel of cheese from Bonhomieburg. You think I would steal? You think I would be that low?" He said, "Yes, I do. I mean, there's that whole crazy from the heat thing that we're still trying to figure out." And I said, "Let's just drop that for now." He said, "Well, where have you been for the past year, Arnold?" I said, "I've been on a trip around the world." He said, "Are you familiar with crime, Arnold?" I said, "I am just a simple man from Jortmund Dingeskir. My mother was a milkmaid in Ottlangen. My father was a human gasoline pump from Dernflager. A human gasoline pump is a man who sucks the gasoline out of the ground with his mouth and spits it into an automobile tank." "The biggest crime in my town when I was growing up was when Farmer Mutter stole the double moose from my Uncle Huden. A double moose is two moose joined at the rear end. It's very neat to look at. They die not long after birth because they fill with feces, and it is just, it flavors the meat so exquisitely." He says, "Are you familiar with murder, Arnold? Have you ever murdered someone?" And I said, "Well, it depends. What do you mean by anyone?" He says, "Well, you ever have murdered a human being?" And I said, "Well, the things I have murdered are technically not humans anymore." He says, "What do you mean?" And I said, "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. I've seen a church made of garbage where the members worship a giant lobster. I've seen a man who runs a panda preserve out of the trunk of his own automobile. All these memories lost like tears in rain." He said, "That's the dude from Blade Runner." I said, "Yes, it was the only DVD we brought with us. We knew Blade Runner 2049 would be out by the time we returned. We were very excited. We wanted to get excited for it. It was a bad decision." He says, "Well, you mentioned murder before." I said, "Oh, yes, that's right. You see, while we were in the nuclear winterlands, we encountered things. It turns out that the polar bears didn't go extinct because of global warming. They went extinct because of the polar mutants." "And yes, occasionally I did have to bludgeon a polar mutant to death with a meat hammer. But they're not really humans anymore, you see, you know. Sure, you look at them tear apart a caribou with one of their five fists, and it's almost graceful, it looks like a ballerina. But you know, when they look at you with their green infested eyes, you know that there's no humanity left in them." He said, "Well, that makes you a suspect in this murder." And I said, "Well, look, I lost my meat hammer at the bottom of the ocean. So unless this man was murdered with an intricately crafted icicle's dagger, then it wasn't me. I have standards, you know. And he looked at me and he says, Arnold, I don't believe you, but I don't have anything to keep you here for now, so you're free to go. And I said, well, you know, I just got back into town and I sold my old apartment. Can I sleep in the jail cells tonight? He said, okay, fine. I said, by the way, I never got to finish Crazy from the Heat by David Lee Roth. Do you have a copy that I could borrow for the evening? And that is where I'll be sleeping this evening.
He told me the whole story about how he came back into town, about his copy of David Lee Roth that he borrowed from the police station. He told me everything. I knew he was telling the truth because his hat was way better than mine. And he had two coats on. They are exactly the length of my coat, except they are two coats when you combine them together. I put two and two together at that point, looking, I didn't even realize it from the curator's eyes at that point. But when I saw it, I went back to the murder scene. The police, they didn't do a very good job. They just left the body right there. It was children's night at the museum. I don't know why they did that. But I looked into his eyes and I realized that he too had the green terror that I cannot pronounce his name. You know what I'm talking about.
Arnold Grafson.
Yes, that's what the mind version of him told me in my mind. But he had the same green, mutant, polar vibe coming out of his eyes. He was a double agent, the curator. He was there to set me up, saying he was the one who stole the square, managed to transport it back across the line. The square was lost, but at least I knew what the mystery was. Unfortunately, so did my cash for that night. I guess that only means back to act mouthwash instead of scope tonight. That is my story. That's about it. I'm gonna get drunk now.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Friendly Town Noir. Give it up for all everyone you saw perform tonight. Give it up for the searing collective mental pain and the greater price we all must pay to survive in this mortal coil. Give it up for that. Those of you who have been adequately intrigued by Friendly Town Noir, those of you who have not been to the show before, I assure you we do not do this every week. More specifically, it's a different theme every week. Every week we have a different concept. Next week's show is going to be Friendly Town Book Club. So if you're sitting there wondering, like, I wonder what this collective